Welcome back to episode 333333333 repeating. Episode 333. There's no significance of that. It's just follows 332, at least I think. So, Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, a couple of things to talk about this week. This kind of came on my radar a latter part of the week. This brewing civil war regarding the Texas border, particularly immigration policy. We have Governor Greg Abbott of Texas. He is in a conflict with the federal government over, razor wire. The Supreme Court ruled that that Border Patrol, the feds down there, part of the Department of so-called Homeland Security, has the right to cut down the razor wire that Greg Abbott's Texas National Guard put up to deal with the immigration problem there, largely created by the federal government, because the federal government has pretty much decided not to enforce immigration law and to encourage mass immigration into the country through a series of, incentives. They've incentivized illegal immigration. We've talked in the past about, you know, the fact that the federal government funding and also working with various opaque national, non-governmental organizations are facilitating not only the arrival of millions of illegal immigrants into the United States, but their dispersal throughout the country using, you know, I guess, a deep state money or a government money, your tax dollars, my tax dollars, I guess you could say our credit, because the government's heavily in debt at this point. So every dollar they spend is a dollar that's borrowed as part of the scam, with interest compounded, of course, to fly these people, bus these people in their various cities, often small towns, small communities, mid-sized cities, to change the demographics of the country. And that's openly stated. It's celebrated by even by our president. Before he was president, he celebrated the decline of the white majority, the eraser of the white majority, and the the coming colored majority of the United States. And he declared it a good thing. Now his government is carrying this out. His Department of Homeland Security is head by Alejandro Mayorkas. Interesting name, Alejandro. It tells you something there. Mayorkas, of course, he's Jewish. Yeah, he is Jewish. And he's spearheading or overseeing this collapse of the U.S. border. This has created a political problem because, of course, the states are dealing with this, particularly the border states. Summer of 2022, late summer, there was this, you could say, a political stunt carried out by various governors, particularly Governor DeSantis of Florida and Greg Abbott, where they transported a lot of these migrants or immigrants, rather, to some blue states. New York, the most entertaining one was when a few thousand of them showed up on Martha's Vineyard. Yeah, I think it was late August or early September. And they were immediately kicked off the island and sent elsewhere, which is usually the policy. But anyway, there's this conflict. The Supreme Court ruled that the federal government can continue to cut down the wire, and Texas Governor Greg Abbott said he's continuing to put up the wire. Now, what's telling is that the Greg Abbott has proclaimed that the state has a right to self-defense that supersedes any federal statute to the contrary. And so he's declaring an invasion, and indeed there is an invasion. Now, the Biden administration is claiming it's not an invasion because it's not an army. So I don't know if the invasion necessitates an army, but this is bio-warfare, meaning it's mass bio-warfare, meaning just overwhelming the country. And the Biden administration seems, determined, rather, to overwhelm the system, sort of a Clara Pliven plan here, overwhelm the system with incompetence. At the same time, they're saying they're trying to secure the border. Well, by securing the border, what they really mean by that is facilitating or making it more efficient, bringing people into the country because of the Great Replacement agenda, which they openly talk about. Greg Abbott said the Lone Star State, visionaries who wrote the Constitution foresaw the state should not be left to the mercy of a lawless president who's doing nothing to stop external threats like cartels smuggling millions of illegal immigrants across the border, Abbott said. The Lone Star State Republican argued that because the federal government has failed to safeguard Texas from an invasion, the state has a constitutional authority to defend itself. That authority is the supreme law of the land and supersedes any federal statute statutes to the contrary, Abbott stressed. Biden administration officials rejected this assertion, contending that the Constitution is actually the supreme law of the land. As we've said many times before, Governor Abbott should stop this extreme political stunts and stop making it harder for, and more dangerous for the Border Patrol to do their jobs, the White House spokesman told the Washington Post. The Supreme Court ruling was 5-4. It's a narrow ruling. It doesn't really solve the conflict here. It's an inherent conflict because you have a federal government. Basically, what they're saying is the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Well, that's only... that's true if they're following the Constitution. I mean, they have a right, but what they're saying is that we have a right, the authority, the sole responsibility over immigration laws. We're not enforcing those immigration laws, so, and you can't do it. So you have the government's not enforcing the law, at the same time claiming the sole responsibility to enforce it and be the sole custodian of that law. At the same time, the state and various states are dealing with the consequences of a, I believe, of course, a planned invasion of the country to change the country's demographics and more or less liquidate or erase the country. So, I mean, will this result in Civil War 2.0, or will there be a conflict? You know, when the feds show up with guns, where Texas guards fire back, where they just accept Biden declaring a federal takeover of the National Guard and just backing down? That's a possibility. Or will there be a compromise? That would probably be the smartest thing to do in an election year. So is this political theater or just does this act? Well, I think, well, in a sense, it is political theater because all politics is theatrics, I guess you could say, show business. Nevertheless, it does highlight a fissure or a problem in our country as, of course, the country slowly breaks apart and the federal government's corruption and cynicism is exposed for all to see here.
Yeah. The statement that Abbott made that I thought was the most important is that when he was asked about the federal government taking over the Texas National Guard, federalizing it, he said, "Well, we do have other armed state employees on the border as we speak right this minute."
Armed.
Yeah, armed state employees. Now that's pretty spicy. Right, mm-hmm. Because he's saying that, well, you can federalize them, but that isn't going to take away our basically our capacity to defend ourselves. And then he said something that I thought was actually quite interesting. He said that in addition to our armed state employees, we will have other law enforcement officers as well as National Guard from other states. Now, when he said National Guard from other states, This really is important because it implies that there is, well, the word collusion may come to mind.
Yes.
That there is conversation between Abbott and the 25 other red state governors about trying to find a way to stop this. So, these things are historically just... theatrical, and it will just peter out in some way. It's hard to imagine that the thing will build up and you'll actually have an armed conflict. But at least the language that is being expressed right now should be something that alerts the public about the seriousness of what's going on, because I don't think there's nearly enough understanding of this.
No.
And in terms of the Biden administration's claim to control immigration, well, yeah, that is actually the constitutional position. However, the border is only a millimeter wide. Once the individuals are into a state, once they've actually, come across the border where the federal government has permitted them to do so, they're now fully under the sovereign control of the people who run the state that they are now in.
Yeah, the broad state police powers inherently.
Exactly. And so, this is our Constitution is designed. This isn't some kind of problem of the Constitution. It is the design of the Constitution to create conflict between the sovereigns, because this is what actually preserves the freedom of the people in these different sovereigns, so they can't be overwhelmed by federalism. So if there is armed conflict, hopefully there will not be, but if there is, it's no there's no question which side will have the moral force behind them. It'll be the people who are trying to defend the states, because the federal government is, you know, it isn't just overreaching. I mean, it's just flat out dictatorship, you know, where they are ignoring all sovereign, you know, power of the states. And the intent of this is also obviously malevolent, because what's going on, and we've discussed this before, is simply ballot stuffing. The people who are coming across the border are not hordes of electrical engineers. These are the disenfranchised from countries that, well, for one thing, have a very high level of violence and terrorism. Two, they don't have a surplus of technical or you know, people who are adroit at business.
But most Americans don't want them here, and they shouldn't be here.
Right, and they don't want them here for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons is they can't do anything, and there's simply an immediate drain. But the thing that they can do is they can work under the auspice of Molly Ball to fill out the ballots, or effectively they won't do that, but they'll just be, you know, they'll be somehow they'll be the ballot will be issued to them, and then you know the powers that be will find out, you know, well, which way they should be voting, and make sure the vote goes in at the right time. So
Yeah,
it's just
it's like Democrats can exploit them for the votes, and big business can exploit them for cheap labor.
they're creating a one party state, and it is a party of basically intellectually debased individuals. I mean, that's really what they're doing here.
Here's a cynicism here. Representative Joaquin Castro, a Democrat of Texas, called on the Biden administration to take over the Texas National Guard, accusing State Governor Abbott of defying the Supreme Court and exploiting the chaos on the border. Who created the chaos on the border? And come on, it's obviously they've incentivized this wave. But it's interesting that here, the Representative Castro, who a few years ago I saw him, I think it was on Meet the Press. Or maybe Face the Nation, one of these talkie shows on Sunday, where he proclaimed the inevitable, inexorable democratic change in changes coming to the United States, and Texas inevitably turning blue, meaning going Democrat because of the demographics, i.e., illegal immigration. And he, being a Democrat, is a primary or at least is a direct political beneficiary of those demographic changes brought about through illegal immigration. So here he is cynically preventing the governor from preventing the state from being overwhelmed by illegal immigrants. But here he is, he's invoking the rule of law to support the Biden administration's breaking the law.
Of
You
course.
know, you can't invoke the Constitution and then as a, the president, his administration, violates their oaths of office. It's there's something. I mean, there's a the Constitution exists doesn't exist for itself. The Constitution exists for the states. In fact, the states created the Constitution. The federal government exists for the states and for the people, not the other way around. I know that's been inverted, in recent decades or in a century and a half, whatever. But remember, the federal government does not exist as a creation of the states and serves the states. But I guess people don't get that education anymore because now it's just a question of power, who has more guns, right? So.
Right. I mean, the whole thing with the Constitution was they wanted to protect citizens against a lawless president. I mean, the idea of tyranny, of a tyrant, was in the minds of the people who are creating the Constitution. And the Constitution and the different sovereignties that are outlined are designed precisely to deal with this problem, a lawless president. And so it's time that you know, these other governors started to stand up for the rights of Texan, because their states are on the chopping block as well. If this is permitted, the illegal immigrants aren't going to just stuff the ballots in Texas. They're going to be all over the United States. In fact, I would bet that there is a plan. Molly Ball et al. Have a plan to make sure that the demographics are very precise politically. In other words, they're going to stuff these guys into areas that are basically swing states. So they can guarantee that they'll never again be, kind of a European, sort of promoting a political party that has any power. That's what they're going to do with these guys. They're going to put them into, the states that are on the cusp, and then they'll organize their ballots in such a way that they can just guarantee that, that they'll always vote for the candidates that they're given. So that's what's going to happen. I just wanted to mention one thing. The idea of federalizing the Texas National Guard is probably one of the stupidest things that I've ever heard in my life. I mean, if they tried that, I would say that the individuals in the Texas National Guard, and I've seen some videos of these people, one, they wouldn't follow orders,
Yes,
and
there's
two,
always that.
most of them would simply take their weapons and desert and organize as radicals with the other National Guards that are going to be brought into the state. I mean, trying that, I don't think it'll happen, Tim, because it would lead almost certainly to real violence, which I think, the Biden administration wants to do. They want to just keep the lid on the thing in terms of publicity and in terms of narrative control. So they may bluster and threaten this, but believe me, I just don't think this is going to happen. They will not try to federalize the Texas National Guard. It would lead to immediate bloodshed.
Well, I
So.
think if they can meet a compromise after the election and continue after that. But their problem is this narrative control is a problem because that's one of the problems they have now is narrative control with so many sources of information now out there. But yeah, you're right. What if those in the National Guard just simply resign or just simply don't follow the orders? They go form their own militia with the backing of state law enforcement. The same
It'll
thing,
create a
even
militia.
even
It will literally create a militia instantly, and they're armed to the teeth, and they've been trained in military maneuvers. So what the heck are you going to do with these
Well,
people?
all those white guys who aren't recruit aren't signing up for the military, recruitment, they'll do that.
Well, so there you have it. So they're not only going to create a militia, but they're going to create one that can actually
Well,
fight.
recently, what Biden threatened, talk about, he was mocking Thomas Jefferson's speech about the Tree of Liberty being fertilized with the blood of patriots and tyrants, by the way, and tyrants, meaning that there's maybe that implies conflict.
Left that out.
Yeah, not to no, it's in tyrants. Sic Semper Tyrannis is basically is the motto of the state of Virginia. It's a warning. He says, well, we have F-16. So who flies the F-16s? Is it your transgendered BIPOC? No.
I
So what
mean,
if
this.
those? I'm saying if there's a general consciousness in the armed forces about there's a break, and already there's a huge morale problem, particularly to the most competent ones, particularly ones that operate the weapon platforms. We
You
see what
know,
happens when diverse people offer weapon platforms that they destroy them. So, I mean, there is this coming awareness that this is happening. So that there's the federal government, and this is sparking conversation about America's about our relationship with the federal government. The federal government seems determined to turn the country into a public shelter for the world. Basically, all the world's problems are America's problems. They're being brought into the country for whatever reason. I think it's demographic for the things we talked about. That's the case of our government is now actively and overtly working at the interest of the American people. Then there's going to have to be a national discussion about about our relationship with that government, the nature of the government, whether or not it deserves any support. And this something like the immigration issue, it concentrates it sheds light on it. It's just a great example how our federal government has been taken over. This happened a long time ago, or just now, just obvious. It's been taken over.
What's happened, Tim, is that the behavior of the government, that has occupied our federal state, is now clear enough so that the public can see that they are actually interested in destroying the American or the heritage American community. This is what they're doing, and it's people warned about this and have been warning about this for decades, but now it's just absolutely transparent that, I mean, if you look at the possible motivations for bringing in the horde across the border, There is no economic reason, really. What can these individuals do? So it is purely a political reason. That's all that they're there for. They're just there to stuff the ballot, and that will debase the ballot of and voting power of the heritage Americans, American citizens, right? So this now is clear. The government that we have is in opposition to the people. The only ones that, I think can support it are the ones who think that it will lead to like a general reparation paradise. There are some people who are so deluded that they actually can imagine, well, the wealth of the United States is unlimited, and all we need to do is take over it politically, and then the reparation checks will all be basically millionaires, and that it'll be a paradise on earth, a workers' paradise.
Yeah, because
But the
what wealth is isn't built or created through labor and effort. It falls like manna from heaven.
Right, exactly. This is the it's just, we're this is just the how many times have we discussed the worker paradise meme, how it's been used historically, and 100% of the time it always fails. But it doesn't just fail. It doesn't deliver the paradise. It always delivers the Holocaust, the genocide. You get the workers' paradise being given to, the Russian peasant and the proletariat, and then you get 150 million dead, like in a couple of decades. So,
Here's the function of narrative, though. To talk narrative, controlling the narrative is Beto O'Rourke. He's a Texas Democrat, former congressman. I think he ran for governor. Was obliterated. Of course, he hopes again that the demographic changes brought about through legal immigration will lead to his political success. Maybe governor, maybe president someday. But he said he likened the feud between Abbott and Biden to the Arkansas governor Orval Fabus's conflict with Eisenhower. Remember, Eisenhower ordered to deploy the National Guard troops in 1957. I think, yeah, Little Rock Central High School to integrate to forced racial desegregation. And so there's a he there's a precedent for this. But here he is invoking the civil rights narrative to counter Abbott's claim about the, of course, te Texas's integrity being violated through an invasion. So basically, now, if you oppose illegal immigration, having your countries having the native people replaced by illegal immigrants and changing the country's culture, really doing away with the country eventually, you're akin to a racial to a segregationist in the South in the 1950s, which is, now obviously that issue is more complex than the narrative has treated it, but nevertheless. In under the current political dispensation, most people understanding history, you don't want to be compared to a segregationist, a Southern segregationist, because they're akin to like Nazis and Klansmen. So there's that, sort of that cynical exploitation of the narrative. Of course, he's comparing two very different situations.
O'Rourke is interesting to me because I think he might be legitimate. In other words, I mean, he's completely a deluded individual, just massively. But I don't think he's a lifetime actor. I always like when I talk about someone like,
Well,
Elon.
there's plenty of genuine fools in our political system.
I mean, O'Rourke,
More than enough of them.
he really strikes me as really sincerely deluded.
So
And
he's generally stupid, right?
yeah, that's right. And if you
That's
look at it, I don't know if you know his background, but he really his he was he was a Columbia graduate, but he was from really like grunge band, kind of the most like degenerate rock and roll world. That's kind of his background.
So he wore a lot of flannel, listened to like
he was just a,
Nirvana.
he's actually kind of kind of the political representative of the punk movement. That's oddly enough, I think that's a fair characterization because of the bands that that he promoted and he was part of. He was actually in he was a bass player in these bands. And during that time, if you ever seen pictures of him, he looks like just a a drug-addled punk rock.
But he hasn't grown up at all, apparently.
No, and so, but see, this is so he's kind of a he's like cherished personality, I think, to the secret society, because he's a legitimate Gentile who is just that stupid, you
Yeah, it's
know?
like someone in Vermont. Now, that's funny because you look at he's a white guy growing up in the 90s, where given the demographics and the economy, you could almost understand how someone would believe that some sort of a diver a sort of a rainbow nirvana, if you will, or heaven, it was possible, right? It was possible. There's the irony is, again, we mentioned the irony, like people in Maine and Vermont, they're the ones most accepting of diversity because they don't have to live the consequences of it. They're far removed from it, so they're gullible, easily taken in. This is a phenomenon that was mentioned by many people in the South during the Civil Rights Revolution, that people they were being lectured by people in Minnesota and upstate New York and California or whatever about how bad they were. They had never had any experience dealing with real racial issues. At the very least, they weren't familiar with the problem. They had this ideal in mind. The idea of a colorblind society, it's very nice, and I understand the appeal to it because it appeals to European ideas of universal morality and universal concepts. The only problem is that the colorblind society, at least in theory, the colorblind society is something that only ethnic whites are able to maintain. So basically, your colorblind society has to be a white society, if not a completely white society, a vast majority white, a vast majority white society, meaning the white supremacy as it understood, meaning the culture, the values, the ethics, the manners, the political understanding, the political culture, the history, that has to be maintained. And those coming into to the host white society have to look at the society as being welcoming and be grateful, as opposed to coming with a sense of grievance and a sense of entitlement. We all know in the past, the narrative of the past 50, 60 years has promoted a sense of entitlement and grievance among all non-whites, all people of color of various shades and hue, to condemn white society so much so that even someone like from the Peruvian mountains will make their way into the United States, and they'll p pick up on the game, if you will, the con, and invoke it. They immediately know it's a con. Just like I was watching, there was a few years ago, there was a video of a restaurant in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It was managed by a Hispanic lady, but on came in all these youths, these black youths came in, and it was a restaurant, I think it was like Chipotle or something, where you order your meal. And they customize it for you, pay for it as you at the end of the line. And they all came in, and the manager refused to serve them. And it's on video, and she says, "Why won't you serve us? Because you don't pay." And this kid, who was probably second generation Somali, his parents probably don't even speak English, said, "Hey, man, that's racist." So he immediately picked up on it. And there's an old 55, 60-year-old boomer at the end, paying for his meal. How come he gets to do it? And she says, "Well, he pays, you don't." And, hey, man, that's racist.
You
The
know,
video went viral. She was fired. Then it turned out that on social media, this kid in the same group, they were posting examples of dine and dash all throughout the restaurant. So they had a reputation. This lady knew that. She was street smart. And so it got out that this kid, these kids are thieves. And then they offered her a job back and all, but it's ironic that Hispanic lady was getting fired for being a racist. But that just tells you immediately they pick up on the con.
Right. Well, you know, the thing, I mean, you have to kind of stand back from it and just sort of look at the overall sort of intellectual and sociological construction that we're living within. And, you know, it of course is more ancient than this, but you know, a good point to begin the understanding of it is like the authoritarian personalities,
Yes.
chapter 23, because here's my point. I don't be too long-winded on it, but this is all one-way traffic. In other words, all of these irrational sort of guilt structures and structures of intellectual impotence and of you know a desire to destroy one's culture. In other words, if you look at the authoritarian personalities' neurosis scales against ethnocentrism or authoritarianism, right? They're all designed. All of the pseudo psychological science is designed to create the impression and to enforce it internally that Europeans are capable of racism and in fact are basically just racist, you know, innately. But Jews can never be, right? Because all of the whole background to the authoritarian personality was the Holocaust, right?
Yes, they cannot be racist.
We have to create this psychology to study the Europeans, and then now we figured out what's wrong, and what's wrong is they have a racial pride and they want to have their fathers with, you know, have possess a sense of authority. So we're going to take that apart, and then the workers' paradise will ensue, and there won't be any more Holocaust. But none of this is ever applied against the creators of the pseudoscience, right?
Yes.
The Jews themselves, if you look at what's going on in Gaza, well, gee, they would seem to be violating some of these principles, right? They're completely racist and certainly are ethnocentric, right? There's not hardly any contestation there. So how can it be that they created this position which works one way against Europeans, but is never applied against them? And so this is the kind of the basic irrational foundation, which then when you go forward into, you know, like the Chipotle lady, even though it's kind of abstract, I'm telling you, this is exactly what the end result is. The people who are the beneficiaries of the revelation of the European racism have no restrictions. There's no, at the end of the day, all there is are reparations and incarceration. They're literally free to carry out any, you know, kind of criminal act that they choose. Because this is really the kind of the force that has been put into motion here. And it will lead eventually, if you look at like the autonomous zones that, you know, we saw in Seattle and other autonomous zones, like there really is literally one in Portland, for example. And of course, in San Francisco, this is really where we are headed. This is where it all will lead up. And these broken and, you know, kind of just tragic zones will be filled with the people who are that they are now bringing across the border.
Yeah, the best. Go ahead.
And what you'll have then is they will have little like racial fiefdoms, I would imagine, that will try to basically predate on any kind of suburban, you know, wealth that they can get their hands on. Because what is not happening, Tim, at the moment is we are not developing any kind of a meritocracy or any kind of, you know, a civilization that is able to sustain itself. All of the things that are going on were designed originally for destruction. They were designed originally to destroy basically European political power. But now as they move forward, they're just going to wipe out the whole country and you're going to end up with just, you know, kind of just a gigantic autonomous zone filled with, you know, socialism and drug addicts.
Yeah, that's you're describing California.
I am. Yeah. I'm looking out.
Yeah, it's a Talmudic oligarchy, and that's what they want to impose on the world. The best illustration of that idea of the Jewish exclusivity or immunity from criticism or suspicion of racism or bigotry last year there was an exchange between Senator Josh Hawley and Attorney General Merrick Garland, and Josh Hawley was grilling the Attorney General on the apparent FBI harassment of Catholics. And he was asking he asked pointedly, what does the FBI have against, or Justice have against Catholics? Of course, the Attorney General Merrick Garland is Jewish. That might be a hint there. This is a 2,000-year-old animosity. He goes back to the foot of the cross. Nevertheless, he makes that point of suggestion. Senator Hawley suggests that Merrick Garland, his FBI, and Justice Department are acting out of malice and bigotry towards Catholics. And Merrick Garland's response was, I can never be guilty of that. I can never be suspected of such malice and such bigotry because you know why? I'm Jewish, or he phrased it in a way, I have relatives who almost died in the Holocaust.
Wow.
So because of the Holocaust, Jews can never be suspected of being bigoted of having malice, or even having something as something like
You
even
know,
even original sin. They're pure. They are pure.
I
That
was
was
doing
his
a show.
attitude.
Yeah, I
That
was doing a
literally.
show. Yeah, we got into the Holocaust thing, and I said, you know, it's a little difficult in a podcast, in 30 minutes to go
So
into all.
whose program was this?
I do so many things I don't even
Okay, yeah.
remember. Like I'll let you. I'll bring it up. But what? A tinfoil hat, I think it was. But I just said, look, read Butz's work, and people should really, we've mentioned this before, but good heavens, whenever you get something like, the idea that, well, the Holocaust is a basically it's a get out of jail free card in perpetuity for any kind of misbehavior or any kind of even criticism. People should really read The Hoax of the 20th Century by Butz, because you need to have that information, kind of at your fingertips to be able to, contest this. I really think that, like there's been a lot of progress made by the independent media. Obviously, right? I mean, you can see it statistically, but one thing that really does need to happen is sort of the last hurdle. Is just to begin this discussion, to have it something that is acceptable and is a topic that really needs to come up over and over again, is just to bring out the details and facts that Buds has arranged, so that people can see that the Holocaust, is actually, when you get into it analytically and look at the details, you can see the power of propaganda and of the illusion that is, and kind of the, sort of the twisting of the facts to create this just overwhelming intellectual structure. And we have to do this. It's going to be painful, because it's sort of like this is the Alamo of the secret society. If the Holocaust intimidation power is broken, if it just gets to the point where people are talking about it, if you're having kind of discussions about it on the internet, as frequently as you are, about Freemasonry or something, then you will see that that we'll really start to transition quickly away from the power of the intimidation. To me, what the whole purpose of the independent media and of what we do or anything is just to break down the power of the intimidation, so people can think clearly and look at these things objectively. That's all that any of us can do. So the biggest tool right now is to use the details that Butsis has brought about, and start to chip away at this inability to discuss it. We just need to talk about it more and more.
Yes, we need I think we need in every school a Holocaust curriculum
Exactly.
that
Exactly right. And the thing is,
we actually that's actually debated and evidence presented.
well, but you see, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, they talk about, like they have the kind of the Holocaust guilt machine that they want in every single school, the museums, which are just sophistry. But what we really need, and this
Piles of
something,
shoes, Joe. Piles of shoes.
aisles of shoes, and don't forget the eyeglasses.
Eyeglasses.
Yeah, because they had their one of the examples that was given was that there was a huge clump of eyeglasses, and this was they were characterized as, well, this is evidence that there was genocide,
Well,
and it
listen,
was
Joe, I have four pairs of eyeglasses upstairs that have since.
no,
New pairs. Does that mean I've killed four people?
right. Well, the fact is that the pile had about like 5,000 eyeglasses in it, and the fact is that the death rates in these camps from just no natural causes
Yes, yeah.
really kind of was gigantic. And
We know people died. It's why they died or
so there
how
it
they
is.
died.
But
Yeah.
so the idea you could assert this photograph as, this is an example of how, they're just able to constantly shove everything into the propaganda, I mean, to keep up the intimidation. The same thing with the pile of bodies and the bulldozers. I mean,
Yeah.
okay, get the pile of bodies. It's horrible. Does anyone know the ethnicity of the people who are being pushed by the bulldozers? Does anyone think about how did the food supply work out during the last 6 months of the war when the Allies were firebombing everything? I mean, so there is only images which create guilt and intimidation and stop thinking, prevent thinking.
Well,
And
here's how it's used. Good example is, of course, with the Israeli Hamas conflict, and of course, the bad press that Israel is getting because of the genocide or the ethnic cleansing it's being obviously being carried out on the pretext of defending itself in response to the October 7th raid, emphasis raid, singular. Here we are months later, and tens of thousands of innocent dead later. They're still doing it, and they're ethnically cleansing the area, openly talking about it while denying doing it. But then nevertheless, you had because of this conversation being carried out on Twitter X, Elon Musk was called in, and he was, I guess he made a pilgrimage to Auschwitz. And I sent you the a sort of a spoof AP article, and it's Krakow, Poland, the AP. Elon Musk, who has been accused of allowing anti-Semitic messages on a social media platform X, visited the site of Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp on Monday, saying afterwards that the tragedy of the Holocaust hits you much more in the heart when you see it in person. I guess he saw the shoes. Musk toured the most notorious extermination camp established by Nazi Germany during World War II before attending a conference on anti-Semitism organized by the European Jewish Association in the nearby Polish city of Krakow. At the conference, the billionaire entrepreneur learned that all the bad things that have happened to the Jews in history have been the fault of non-Jews, and that anything less than a state of complete subservience to the Jews risks another Holocaust. Musk admitted to having been naive about the extent of anti-Semitism until recently, saying that it is because most of his friends are Jewish and he has little contact with it in his own life. Musk was reportedly shocked when he was presented with a glowing orb labeled the Holocaust that had been pulled from an abandoned well in the center of the camp. His Jewish host informed him that the illuminated orb is the source of all Jewish power in the world today. And there's a reason the Jews, through the organizations like the ADL, have the right to decide what everyone else is allowed to say in public.
Yeah, that's pretty vicious satire, but it kind of hits the spot. I mean, Musk was touring the grounds with Ben Shapiro,
Yes. He was a
and so,
vicious, like, Jewish chauvinist.
I mean, one of the most I mean, he's just absolutely murderous, and so the idea that Musk was there to gain some kind of understanding is just this was just a PR stunt. Look, Musk is a lifetime actor. You don't really have to do a lot of analysis to understand this. He comes from a converso family. You see his mom in Freemason regalia constantly, right? She's just bragging about it. And he's artificial. I mean, he doesn't know anything about. I mean, he cannot code. He's not a scientist. He's just an artificial creation like Bill Gates that has been established for the purpose of being a figurehead for technology that the oligarchs want to use to,
Yeah, like Bill Gates was the nerd and Steve Jobs was the cool guy, right?
Yeah, exactly. But they were also
All
to
marketing
replace,
now.
they were there to replace the IBM, kind of business suit kind of thing, so that people would think their computers are hip, so they could slip an iPhone into our,
With the
pocket.
collusion of, by the way, with the collusion of IBM.
Of course. I mean, look,
And by
I've
the way,
got.
IBM, I think, had an office at Auschwitz.
Of course they did.
During,
Well, I
they
mean,
had the counting,
that's
right? The machine. They wasn't. There was the
well,
machine.
there's actually a picture of Watson and Hitler before war. The thing is,
Make of that what you will. I'm just saying that, again, if IBM were on the wrong side of the political spectrum, that would be talked about endlessly, right?
I just want to digress for one second and point out that it's sort of like the American industrial fascists, in quote, like Prescott Bush, helping to finance, and Watson helping Hitler. Okay, so they're this collection. I mean, they're all secret society members. Watson is Bohemian Grove. Prescott Bush is Skull and Bones and a Freemason. And the fact of the matter is, even though it is characterized that this is being done, for anti-Semitic purposes, what Watson was doing and was by keeping track of Jews, trying to organize them, was one, he was helping Hitler with the Zionist project, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because these were details that could be used to help organize Jews that Germany was financing to emigrate to Israel, right? Hitler was the biggest mechanical Zionist that ever existed. He pushed more Jews down there than anybody else. But moreover, when they, this idea of it, once the Holocaust breaks down, once you start to see it as, you know, this is just a war is going on, the camps were terrible, there was high death rates, there was anti-Semitism and a lot of the guards, you know, but this is just no different than what occurred during the Boer Wars and in their concentration camp. There's no special extermination program against Jews. Once you start seeing that, you realize that, like, what Watson was actually doing, what the whole thing was doing, is they were trying to find a way to get the Jews out of Germany because they knew they were going to firebomb and bring in the, you know, Stalin's Asiatic hordes to rape and murder everyone. This was done to protect them, I think, actually, rather than you know, as any kind of extermination. And then, of course, following the war, you have like the you know, the demographic problems of counting, because you want to get to the 6 million number. It's just ridiculous. They're moving the boundaries of countries, and then after the fact, trying to come up with census, comparing them to the country before it was basically in some other place. So the whole thing is just a lump of sophistry, and you know, Watson's participation in that should be looked at. He was there as a Bohemian Grove representative to try to help Hitler find a way to protect Jews, not some of the, you know, the American fascist, you know, people who are anti-Semitic, like, for example, the Bush family, the famous anti-Semites that are constantly photographed at the Wailing Wall in their yarmulkes, you know.
Yeah, we're supposed to be upset about displaced people during the war, particularly, you know, a few million Jews being displaced and moved about here and there. Obviously an unpleasant experience. I wouldn't want to have it as bad as it was. But then again, we're supposed to ignore the displacement of 12 million ethnic Germans from Central and Eastern Europe and the deaths of about 2.5 to 3 million of them in the process. But no one makes movies about that. You know, Steven Spielberg isn't making a movie about it. So basically it's not burned in the consciousness of American people who get their idea of reality through Hollywood, which is controlled by Jews, which explains so much about the current state of affairs.
I just don't think that people can really think clearly until they have the ability to analyze the Holocaust objectively. If you can't do that, if it's just too painful or too confusing, I just don't think how you can come to a situation.
They want the moral fairy tale story, because that, at one sense, they find it, if you're an American, at one time you'd be complimented by it, because it was like America, this sort of the vindicator, liberating state. And we're Americans and we rule the world, and we saved Europe from German or Teutonic tyranny twice in the 20th century. So why don't you shut up? We're Americans, and all that narrative. And they don't want to get into the, you know, the intrigues of the diplomatic wrangling that brought about the war. It was really Lord Halifax who was bringing about the war, his bad faith diplomacy with Germany, provoking Hitler and these sort of things. So, but that, you don't want that, you have to read a book or two.
Right. Who can do that anymore?
And who wants to do that when there's so much else to watch on the internet, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
and again, getting back to my point, if you look at Mayorkas's statement about how he cannot have any kind of racial antagonism toward Catholics, it's impossible. It's literally mechanically impossible.
Or Merrick Garland, even Mayorkas too. Also, by the way, Mayorkas too was confronted with his crimes or his maladministration. I think he invoked a Holocaust too. So
right, but, well, of course. But the thing is that it works automatically because we're self-correcting. The Holocaust intellectual structure is a self-correcting structure that makes it impossible to analyze the behavior of people who claim descendants, you know, from the Holocaust victims, in any real way. We just can't. We can't think clearly. And so this is why, when you get to something like, well, you know, you're persecuting Catholics, the response is, well, no, the Holocaust. And there it is. I mean, it's completely incoherent, but it works because the minds of the European victims of this sophistry are not able to process information. They're like stuck. So this is why I say that the greatest thing that can happen now is to promote just constant discussion and open critical discussion. People who want to promote the existing narrative of, they should get into situations where they're discussing it with people who don't buy it. I don't want to try to like ramrod the Holocaust revisionism down people's throats. I want to just open it up to discussion. If you start having discussions, I think that really you could have dramatic change in the minds
Well,
of America.
it's important because the Holocaust has supplanted the Christian mythos, which defined European civilization for
Exactly. That's
millennia.
right.
So there's been
Yeah.
a supersessionism that's occurred.
Logos was replaced with the Holocaust.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and that's very
That didn't
profound
happen.
because I mean it's
That didn't
basically there's
happen.
laws, there's no law in the West that will put you in jail or penalize you anyway if you deny the Holy Trinity or the divinity of Christ. There are all laws in the books if you publicly deny or question the Holocaust in, I think, more than a dozen countries. So what does that tell you?
Actually, there were laws concerning denial of Christian theology in the Middle Ages,
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm saying there were. There aren't any now.
but there are none now. Certainly none.
Exactly.
Zero.
So there's no heresy laws against, there's no her spreading heresy is no longer a crime. Because we're no longer Christian or integral or confessional states.
Christians don't
Basically,
have any.
it was considered treason almost to maybe if you're an integral like Spain in the 15th century, being Catholic was being Spanish. If you were not Catholic, you were not Spanish. Therefore, you considered an alien person and either subject to restriction or expulsion. It kind of makes sense if you think about it in the terms of the 15th century. During the Enlightenment and in the 19th century, we had this conceit of liberalism, where we're told that these things don't matter. Ethnicity, ethno-religion doesn't matter anymore. Well, obviously it does, and especially if only a few or one group, who particularly powerful group, is allowed to play by those rules. But now, modern heresy is questioning the Jewish narrative because there's been
Yeah.
Jewish supersessionism brought about. Oh, greatly facilitated. It was gradual, but it was obviously the coup, the watershed event was the Holocaust or the Holocaust narrative, and the subsequent interpretations of that event or whatever it was. Obviously, if you follow the historiography of it, it's ever changing, which leads you to believe that it's a lie because truth doesn't change.
Right,
Narratives
exactly.
change. Narratives change. Truth doesn't,
Well, that's why it's such an eye-opener to read Butz's stuff because he goes through the history of the Holocaust kind of concept, and it changed about 10
I
times
know,
before
but
even
you
the
can't
war
question.
was over.
But and the
Even
question,
before the
each one of those
war was
changes is
over,
a crime.
which camps were doing it, who was, who, I mean, it's just a lump of sophistry,
What
and
it
it's a pattern.
goes from, like, was it pits of flame to gas chambers to Holocaust by bullets? Well, which is
Yeah.
it?
No, and they had things like the my favorite is the water electricity where they claimed that they would have these metal kind of swimming pools that they would push people out into, fill them up with water, and then run electricity through it. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yes.
So this was, but this was given seriously, as something was going on, and as kind of a
Well, what's
plank of the.
interesting is idea of the gas chamber. We hear about gas chambers and Zyklon B, which was was meant to control lice and typhus. Which it is an insecticide, so it leads you to believe if there is Zyklon B being requisitioned used, one would assume it's an insecticide, not to kill people with. Anyway, but nevertheless, they switch the narrative. That's how you don't have
Well,
evidence. Then we'll take evidence of the counter narrative and apply it to our narrative and just lie about it. But the is that 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 the source of that the source of that is at least in the Jewish consciousness, this is how it's being exploited, is in the early part of the 20th century, late 19th, 20th century, you had this mass migration of Eastern Jews into Germany. These Eastern Jews were from the Pale, and they lived in the shtetl. They have no idea of hygiene, and they came infested. And of course, the Germans at the time were the most hygienic advanced civilization on Europe, if not the world. And in order to process and deal with these hundreds of thousands, not millions of immigrants or migrants from the East, they had subjected them to sort of institutionalized public, bathing and delousing, head shaving, and all this. This is like 1908, 1910. And that process is in many ways can be humiliating and dehumanizing, like a prison is, right? But it wasn't genocidal. But that's burned into the Jewish consciousness, and it's exploited 25 years later in the Holocaust narrative. That's where it's born. But it's got nothing to do with the final solution, so-called, or the plan to exterminate European Jewry, which never existed, nor is it on paper anywhere. That's the source of it.
I want to assert something, because the thing is that every time, we get into the Zyklon B discussion, I always think it's so worthwhile to bring up a fact that I brought up many times before, and I know you're aware of it, but I just want to reiterate it because it's one of those things that should be discussed at Thanksgiving dinner.
This may be a digression. Pass the cranberry sauce. Let's talk about Zyklon B.
that is that the official story about how, Zyklon B was used to exterminate 6 million Jews, is that Huss, who was the German commandant, he was not in a direct chain of command. He wasn't like he was like Himmler's, assistant.
Yeah.
Himmler went past these two individuals and came to Hess, and he said, we want to exterminate. We need to exterminate these Jews. And we're giving you the responsibility of doing this, and then walked away. This is the official story. And then Hess goes, well, okay, how am I going to do this? And he goes, I know. We'll use carbon monoxide from car engines. So he tries this, and he goes, well, this just doesn't work at all.
Wasn't it diesel, too? So it really doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's kind of a funny story. The first version of the story was carbon monoxide from gas engines. But then after the claim was made, they realized this was nonsensical because it just took too long to kill anyone with it. Mm-hmm. They'd be like months trying to kill like 100 people. So they switched to diesel. That occurred after the first version of the story. But be that as it may. So anyway, Hess is sitting there going, Himmler wants me to kill all these people. And I just, what am I going to do? And he walks around the camp and he looks up and he goes, wait a second, what's this? It's a can of Zyklon B. I know, I could use this. And this is literally how the technologically sophisticated Germans, I mean, remember, they're building like the B-2 and the jet airplane, things like this, this was their solution, was to give the project to Hess and just let him wander around the camp to find something he could use.
Yeah, it was done with word of mouth and a wink and a nod, right? No,
and
no,
this, yeah, no and documents. This is not like a Holocaust revisionist. This is the official story. This is the actual confession that they beat out of the guy, which is completely nonsensical. And yet, if you take out that, if you remove that, the whole thing collapses virtually, right? But this is simply the case that they had a delousing, gas, which Hess decided could be, I could probably use this to kill people. And so then the first version of the story is he went over to some peasant houses and said, let's seal them up, put the Jews in and drop in the canisters. And this is how the German industrial and scientific and, of course, completely malevolent world decided this was the technique they were going to use. This was how they came about it. It's just not absolute nonsense. And so this has to be brought up at the Thanksgiving dinner, in between the cranberry and the gravy, is that we've got to bring up the Zyklon B mythology, because the family needs to know this. We need to know these details so we can think clearly, so that when people tell us, they can't discriminate against Catholics because of the Holocaust, our minds don't stop and go, my God, I feel so intimidated, my mind is frozen. But they go, well, that starts not to make much sense, because really the whole explanation of how, these gas chambers came about is not really real, so that people can start thinking a little bit here, and not just be frozen in place.
Yeah, but then your liberal aunt will call the ADL, report you, and you'll lose your job. And this is how truth is maintained.
That she won't let you have any of the the pumpkin pie at the end of the dinner.
Yes. So, did you hear? I sent you also our article. The FAA is launching a recruitment campaign for workers with
Yeah,
severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, and physical
really,
issues to hit
really something.
the with DEI targets. This is how you maintain. Apparently, diversity is the key mission of the FAA. I always thought it was public safety and the efficient administration of America's aviation industry. But apparently, it's important that people are severe handicap people are hired by the FAA to do that. They have John P. Benison is the Assistant Administrator, Office of Civil Rights, is charged with implementing the FAA's DEI plan. It's overseen, of course, by Pete Buttigieg, the Department of Transportation. He's Pothole Pete from South Bend, Indiana. Our Secretary of Transportation couldn't even fix the potholes in South Bend, Indiana's mayor, but now he's supposedly head of our transportation system. The FAA states on its website how individuals with severe mental and physical disabilities represent an underrepresented segment of the federal workforce. Well, shouldn't they?
But I still have a question.
It's like,
Would
I mean,
the FAA mind giving us a list of the jobs that it thinks that mentally retarded people would be good at doing that they have?
what's
Could
happened?
park
This
all.
severe,
I mean,
there's been a.
they aren't talking about like air traffic controller, are they? I mean,
I think they are. I
what
think they're.
job? Well, then give us the list so that we can see them,
Just
because
because
it
you're
just,
blind doesn't mean you shouldn't be an air traffic controller.
I guess not.
Or
I
just because
mean,
you're stupid or have low, you don't have attention deficit disorder, you should not be an air traffic controller.
what if you can't form words well? I mean, how are the pilots going to
Well,
hear?
that's again, that's another thing. I mean, it's the obviously what's brought that there's been a number of close calls or accidents that has highlighted perhaps the competency crisis afflicting aviation in America in general. And some people have connected this to this DEI initiatives where basically what matters again is diversity, diverse representation among the workforce as opposed to competency. Well, there's going to be real physical consequences for these things like bridges falling, planes crashing, these things, parts falling off planes. Virgin Atlantic had a situation where a passenger happened to notice that a wing was missing four bolts. So, but the nevertheless, the FAA has responded to these incidents that I just cited by suspect goes up with the 737 MAX plane, which lost a door or something. So it just came off mid-flight. They said they're going to conduct. They're going to be conduct. I'm sorry.
Boeing is 100% affirmative action
Yes, and
DEI.
now we're saying yeah, because if you're not going to hold off for high
And
standards, but nevertheless.
everyone knows this in the industry, that the planes are not safe any longer.
Yeah. And so because of what was it because of diversity? The FAA says they're gonna respond by conducting extensive inspections and increasing oversight of Boeing's production line, the 737. They're the ones producing 737. Of course, that I asked the question, can the American people be confident that the extensive inspections will result in greater public safety if they're being conducted by people with severe mental and physical disabilities? Because they're actively recruiting people with severe mental and physical disabilities. So what confidence do we have in these extensive inspections if people doing it are mentally disabled?
And also, if they found a problem, what would be the consequence? Could they fire someone? How would they do that? I mean, it's once meritocracy goes, there is no like kind of platform upon which coherency can operate, right? Because you can't fire the guy, or it's a transgender. I mean, it's as simple as
Well, how
that.
is diversity mission critical for the FAA?
Well, it's mission, like destructive. It's completely opposite. This is an example, but of course, all industry and all, meaningful kind of technical things are, they're an example of where you have to have meritocracy. You just have to have it.
But
It's
if you are
impossible.
disabled, the term disabled means you are not abled.
Yeah, you have to have a
So that means
bar.
that they're now. Here's the thing. There's a difference between having compassion and making accommodations for people, then giving them position jobs that they cannot do. They're inherently disabled. They can't do perform these jobs. There's also, if you have these diversity goals, racial quotas, if you will, or goals and goals that they have, and timelines. As these are the terms they use. The problem is, at any given moment, you're not going to have enough diverse people of color, enough of them to fill the positions while maintaining the same standards. So instead of saying, "Oh well, we tried," and then maybe going through the hard slog of addressing cultural educational issues, that may be a part of it. It may never be. You're never going to get equality with freedom because there are group differences. I just saw a study about how many hours Asians study per week, how many hours Black Americans study per week. There's quite a gap between Asians and Blacks. Are you surprised by that? And if
No, it's
you're
good.
going to have a culture that celebrates shuffle and jive and coolness and vibrancy, but not exactitude, not perfection, there's going to be real differences in how those people, how they're employed, their income, and these things. And if you want to celebrate those differences, you're going to have to celebrate the differences of income. I'm sorry. Because those differences have real, so you have this fantasy of equality, which you have in diversity, equity, inclusion, which is just it's just a war on civilization. That's not even the goal. It's to destroy all standards. You're going to have these differences, and so you cannot maintain standards. You can't maintain a highly technical, advanced society
Yep,
with primitive
you just said
people.
it. There it is. Exactly. And there's the goal. This is
Yes.
exactly what's happening. This is why Naked and Afraid
Yeah.
is such a popular TV show, is because the vision that the oligarchs have is a post-industrial world for the human clump that they will be taking their sex slaves out of.
I mean, the
You
FA is
know?
really saying we're going to hire retarded people to
But, and
oversee.
so.
Basically, this is the FAA, which is becoming increasingly diverse and retarded, is going to oversee an aviation industry, which, because of DEI, is also increasingly retarded and diverse
And where
and
does it end up?
incompetent.
Where does it end up? It
The
ends up,
end of civil aviation.
well, they end up exactly right. This is exactly where it ends
Yes.
up. This is where we're taking it. And then and so then you can't travel, and that is reduced. And of course, this is not a bad thing because of the global warming. We're going to have less travel. These 15-minute cities will be popping up where this is as far as you can, move in any one day. And the cars will all be controlled by, electronically and through the internet, so you can't really drive. So this is these things are, there's that when you see something like this, you really it's a good idea to think about where is actually the goal of the thing. And I think it's you're looking at one of the methods by which we get to the post-electric world. That's my take
Yeah,
on
and this
this.
is the same why we have the immigration crisis that's facilitated by the federal government. This is,
100%.
yeah,
Yeah.
you're worrying about we don't have enough Black female pilots in civil aviation. We don't have enough Black scientists or engineers, women in science. These things we all worry about. STEM program. We need more women in science. Well, why? Why? What if they don't like it? What if they're not good at it? What makes sense does it make? And by the way, if you're going to stress. Good example, you can stress women in science and in technical fields and professionalism. Who's going to have the babies? Who's going to raise them? Oh, the state. The state that's
Exactly.
increasingly retarded and perverse and grotesque. I'm so, there's only so much time in a life, hours in a day, days in a week, months in a year. If you can do one thing, you can't do the other, and there's cost of these things. And we have to dispense with this idea of equality because it's only through the division of labor. Which means the differences between people, then they exchange, and primarily these primarily through voluntary exchange, and that's usually the best way to deal with these things. That's the only way you get material progress. Good example is the we're all worried about the ethnic makeup of pilots, the mechanics, and engineers, and these things. Supposedly, with DEI is going to address this just through quotas. And you're not going to get any substantive decline in the product and declines in public safety. Obviously, we are seeing that. Is what remember a couple of years ago there was that poster at the African American Museum in Washington, D.C. Aspects and assumptions of whiteness, white culture in the United States. And listed was rugged individualism, family structure, emphasis on scientific method, Protestant work ethic, status, power, and authority, aesthetics, ideas of justice, competition, communication, these things. Well, if this is unique to whiteness, these also are things that make a modern society, productive, wealthy society possible. If you're going to derogate these things as just whiteness and then condemn whiteness and then engage in a program of racial quotas and diversity, which doesn't follow things like, time, being punctual, being exact, being a perfectionist, these things all whiteness. Well, you're not going to have white pilots. You're not going to have white, you know, I mean, you're not going to have black pilots. You're not going to have black engineers, because these things require, you know, punctuality, perfectionism. Because believe me, a 737 requires a lot of exactitude to put together and to fly it. So if you're going to promote, if you're condemned, that's these aspects of white culture, these aren't the dominant aspects of our culture, and it's to shuck and jive, vibrant culture that they celebrate with colored people. Well, you're going to get a primitive culture that goes with that type of attitude. And
or a non-existent one, because they sold the same bill of goods to women when they brought feminism, right? And of course, you know, one of the big parts of it was birth control.
Yeah.
And that was necessary because women were going to be in the workforce, and they couldn't be raising children. Now looking forward, right, from the introduction of the feminist
argument, of course, with birth control goes basically what follows from the ideology of birth control is the derogation or the contempt for motherhood and raising children.
Right, which leads where? It leads to a complete genocide of whichever population is dumb enough to fall for this.
Which is why you need mass illegal immigration to fill the gap.
And there we are. Now we're back to to what we were talking about. You can see how the linkage now is completely transparent. Now you have the great replacement, which is brought about by the great debasement. Right, you have the great debasement that is defined in authoritarian personality, you know, and going back like 200 years before that, but is well defined in the authoritarian personality. And the great debasement then leads to, well, now you need the great replacement, because instead of a workers' paradise, we're having a workers' genocide here. Our populations are all in decline. All of the structures of our civilization are failing. And so what do? Well, we have to replace it with what? People who are going to be very susceptible to the lower rung of social status that the oligarchs have in mind for humanity, right? It's going to be really very much, we've seen it. The autonomous zones are, you know, with the fentanyl, with the violence, this is what life will be like. This is what it's becoming right now, you know?
Yep. So. Well, I think we covered it.
Yeah, I think we got it, Tim. I really liked the way we linked it all together at the end, brother.
Anyway, okay, Joe.
We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.